Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine, just for a second, that you are working with the most brilliant research assistant on the planet. I mean, they can read thousands of pages in seconds. They can write flawless code in a dozen different languages and format incredibly complex data tables without even breaking a sweat.
Right, sounds like a dream.
It does. But there is a massive, massive catch. Every single time they leave the room, their memory is completely wiped.
Oh, wow. Yeah, a total blank slate. So you sit down with them the next morning and you have to spend like an exhausting amount of time just re-explaining the core premise of the project, you know, what the two of you accomplished yesterday and the underlying logic of why you were doing any of this in the first place.
Yeah, it would be endlessly frustrating. You would spend way more time managing the assistant than actually doing the work. And yet, if you step back and look at it, that is exactly how most of us are interacting with generative artificial intelligence right now.
Yeah.
We are basically treating it like this brilliant, capable amnesiac.
We really are.
So, welcome to another deep dive. Today, we are looking at a fundamental shift in how we structure complex, long-running projects. And for you listening, our goal today isn't just to talk about yet another AI tool. We are unpacking a capability, specifically a new Claude Code skill called Repo to Collab, that completely flips this dynamic. We're looking at how to turn AI from a simple shortcut generator into a genuine co-author.
And to actually achieve that level of collaboration, we have to deal with something that isn't really about code at all. It is about tacit
That's
knowledge.
a knowledge.
Yeah, meaning the unwritten, unspoken context that just sort of floats around in our heads and actually makes a project work. If you are juggling a million different perspectives and trying to avoid information overload, you cannot rely on memory alone. You need a structural system.
Right.
So our roadmap for today is first we'll look at the current debate in academia about AI. Then we'll explore a really clever structural solution borrowed from 1970s computer science. And finally, we'll break down how this practically works for any long-running project.
Perfect. So before we get into the nuts and bolts of how we build that system, we need to understand why this shift in how we use AI is so critical right now. Let's look at the current landscape. Specifically, this massive divide in academia over AI's role in research. Because on one side of the aisle, you have people who view AI as actively corrosive to the very idea of scholarship.
Yeah, and those concerns carry a lot of weight. I mean, the argument is that AI frequently produces confidence-sounding nonsense.
Right, the hallucinations.
Exactly, hallucinations that look structurally perfect but are totally factually void. And furthermore, it homogenizes thinking. If everyone is, you know, using the same language model to draft their papers, the diversity of academic thought just flattens out.
Which is terrifying for research.
It is, but the deepest fear is that AI allows researchers to outsource the intellectual struggle, the friction of wrestling with dirty data, of hitting dead ends, of laboring over a paragraph. That struggle is traditionally what makes research valuable. Academic integrity has always relied on the researcher enduring that process to form a genuine argument.
Oh, for sure. And the pushback is intense. I mean, some journals are banning AI-generated text entirely. You have academic departments treating unauthorized AI use with the same severity as outright plagiarism.
Yeah.
It's a very hard line drawn in the sand.
Yeah, it really is.
But then there's the counter perspective. The other side doesn't see AI as a shortcut to avoid the struggle. They see it as a capability multiplier.
Right, and history gives us a really fascinating parallel here. Think back to when statistical software or computational notebooks were first introduced to university departments. They faced nearly identical resistance.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Senior academics worried that if a computer ran the regressions instantly, the younger researchers wouldn't truly understand the underlying mathematics. They felt the manual struggle of calculation was essential to the knowledge.
Wow. But the researchers who adopted those computational tools early on, they didn't stop doing math. They just moved faster and started asking much bigger, vastly more complex questions that would have been, completely impossible to calculate by hand. So it is not a question of using AI or not using AI. It's about how we use it. It feels like moving from being the person manually painting every single frame of an animation to being the director of the entire film. Like, as the director, you are still entirely responsible for the final product. Your name is on it. But your mental energy is spent on the lighting, the script, the overarching vision, not the repetitive brushstrokes of painting the cells.
That is a great analogy, and that altitude shift is the defining characteristic of this new workflow. Look at how things are operating internally at places like Anthropic, for example.
Okay, what are they doing?
Well, software engineers, they're no longer writing the majority of their code base line by line. Instead, they are planning architectures, designing systems, and rigorously reviewing the code that the AI generates.
Wow, that is a staggering paradigm shift for an entire profession.
Right, and it goes beyond engineering, too. Consider a marketing function run almost entirely by one human employee who coordinates a fleet of various AI agents.
Just one person.
Just one person. Because human judgment isn't being replaced in these scenarios, it is operating at a much higher altitude. The human sets the strategic direction and evaluates the output. And evaluating that output actually requires a deeper, more conceptual understanding of the subject matter. Meanwhile, the AI handles the execution across a massive surface area.
Okay, but if we are acting as the director of this complex project, we need a reliable way to communicate our vision to our crew day after day without starting from scratch. Which brings us right back to our brilliant amnesiac problem. How do we keep the AI from forgetting our entire directorial vision between sessions? Because every time you close a chat window and reopen it, the context is just gone.
What's fascinating here is how we can identify the mechanical root of this problem. It is the rapid evaporation of that tacit knowledge we mentioned earlier.
Right.
Think about what a project actually is. It isn't just the final data set and the polished code. A project is your working memory of a highly specific debugging session you did last Tuesday. It is the unwritten, highly contextual reason why a certain variable is filtered out of your data set. It is the running list of open questions you have about a weird anomaly. And when you close your laptop, all of that evaporates from the AI's perspective.
Because it only ever existed in your own head, or it was temporarily floating in the context window of that specific chat session, and once the session ends, it's just gone.
Exactly. So to solve this, we actually have to look backward. We look to a foundational philosophy from Unix and Linux operating systems, a concept dating back 50 years.
Okay.
The philosophy is incredibly simple. Everything is a file. In a Unix system, hardware devices, network sockets, background processes, they are all abstracted as files that can be read and written to through a uniform, predictable interface.
Wait, let me push back on that.
Sure.
Unix operating systems from the 1970s. How does a 50-year-old hardware protocol help me wrangle a cutting-edge generative AI? That feels like trying to fix a Tesla with a horseshoe. You know, like files are for tangible things, like a paper draft, a massive spreadsheet, or a data set. How do you take an abstract thought like what I was considering yesterday regarding this tricky data anomaly and turn that into a file?
By using plain text, specifically markdown text. You take all of that tacit knowledge, your daily checklist, your collaboration rules, your handoff notes from yesterday's session, and you explicitly write it down in markdown. Then you place those files directly in your repository, sitting side by side with your code and your data.
But why markdown specifically? Why not, I don't know, a Word document or a PDF?
Ah, because of how large language models actually process information. AI models read tokens, which are essentially chunks of text. Plain markdown is incredibly lightweight and structurally clear. It uses simple symbols like hashtags for headers or dashes for bullet points to organize information without any of the massive invisible formatting overhead that comes with a rich text document.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. So when an AI reads a markdown file, it instantly understands the hierarchy and the rules without wasting valuable processing power or hitting context limits. The file system itself becomes the universal translator and the collaboration medium. It isn't just documentation you write at the bitter end of a project for some future researcher to read next year. It is the active, living interface through which you and the AI work together in real time.
Okay, the mechanism makes total sense.
Mm-hmm.
If LLMs process text tokens, feeding them clean, organized text files is obviously the most efficient way to communicate. But let's talk about the human cost of this. Because if I have a massive ongoing research project, I do not want to spend 4 hours sitting at my desk, manually typing out my internal monologue, my unwritten rules, my folder structures, and my daily checklists into markdown files before I can even start my actual work. How does this happen in practice without becoming a soul-crushing administrative burden?
Well, that friction is exactly what the Repo to Collab skill is designed to eliminate. It is an automated tool that builds this specific structural scaffolding right over your existing project, essentially extracting that tacit knowledge with minimal effort on your part. And it operates in four distinct phases.
Okay, let's break them down.
Phase one is the analysis phase.
So if it's analyzing my project before I even speak to it, I imagine it must be reading the file signatures. Like if I have a directory full of Python scripts, it obviously knows I'm coding in Python.
Yes, but it goes much deeper than just seeing Python scripts. It maps your entire directory tree and runs an inference engine based on combinations of file types.
What do you mean by combinations?
Well, if it sees .txt files mixed with .bib bibliography files, it infers this is an academic research writing project targeting a specific publication. If it sees a mix of Python, R, or SAS files alongside CSV datasets, it knows it's a quantitative empirical analysis. If it sees a package.json file, it knows it's a modern software application. It surveys the landscape and figures out the fundamental architecture before it ever asks you a single question.
Wow, which naturally leads to phase two, the interview. Since it already knows the architecture, it doesn't need to ask me tedious questions about my folder structure. It just needs the context it can't mathematically infer.
Precisely. It will ask you for a one or two sentence description of your overarching goal. It will ask what specific academic journal or publication you are targeting. It will ask what phase the project's currently in, like are you cleaning data, running regressions, or writing the final draft?
Okay, so it gathers the architectural data, it asks for the human vision, and then it moves to phase three generation. It synthesizes all of that into the actual markdown scaffolding. And it's not just dropping in generic boilerplate templates, right?
No, not at all. It writes highly specific, tailored guidelines based on the exact tools and goals you just established.
Very cool. Then, in phase four, the summary, it hands you a clean report of what it just built and gives you the exact command line prompts to launch your first fully contextualized session.
Yeah, and now we need to look at what it actually generated during that process. Because the most critical component is the root file, named clubine.d.md.
Mm-hmm.
Think of this as the shared brain of the entire project.
The shared brain, I like that.
This file lives at the very top of your project folder. It contains your core research questions, your methodology, your specific sample filters, and your strict coding conventions. At the start of every single session, the AI reads this file first. This ensures both of you are completely aligned on the big picture before a single line of code is written or edited.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. The tool doesn't just create one giant master file, because that would be overwhelming. Instead, it creates localized subfolder Claude.md files.
Yes.
These act like highly specific behavioral contracts for different parts of your project. Let's use an analogy. Instead of the AI carrying a massive, heavy filing cabinet on its back everywhere it goes, which obviously slows it down and confuses it, it just walks down the hallway.
Right.
When it needs to look at your statistical outputs, it walks into the results folder. On the door of that folder is a sticky note, the local markdown file, that says, hey, this room is read-only. We only put final outputs in here. We never, ever edit them directly.
Exactly. Or if it walks into the write-up folder, the sticky note on that door enforces the specific stylistic rules, citation formats, and margin requirements for the academic journal you are submitting to.
And the genius of these subfolder files is that they load lazily.
Yes, lazy loading is the mechanical secret to making this work within the constraints of an AI. Large language models have finite context windows, which is a limit on how many tokens they can hold in their working memory at one time.
Right.
If you load every single rule, format, and variable from your entire project into the AI's memory at once, two things happen. First, it costs an absolute fortune in API computing costs. Second, the AI suffers from the lost-in-the-middle phenomenon, where it gets overwhelmed by information overload and starts hallucinating or just ignoring instructions.
Which defeats the whole purpose.
Completely.
Huh.
By lazy loading, the AI only reads the rules for the specific folder it is currently working in. So if you are debugging a data script in Python, the AI doesn't need to have the journal's LaTeX formatting rules clogging up its working memory. This keeps the prompt incredibly lean and laser focused.
Okay, so we have the shared brain at the top and we have the local sticky notes on the folder doors. But what are the daily rhythm? How does it actually remember what we accomplished yesterday so we don't repeat ourselves?
Well, that function is handled by an entirely different file called .claude/status.md. This is the living, breathing, working memory of your project. And the tool installs bundled skill-specific commands to manage it automatically.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so when you sit down with your coffee in the morning, you type /session start. The AI automatically reads the shared brain, it reads this status file, and crucially, it reads the last 5 Git commits you made.
Wow, okay.
It instantly absorbs the trajectory of the work, gets completely up to speed, and essentially asks, All right, I see we fixed the data pipeline yesterday. What are we tackling today?
That immediately jumps you past the blank slate problem, and the workflow during the session becomes a true back-and-forth collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
Say you are working on a complex statistical model, and you have to adjust for certain variables to make sure your treatment and control groups match a process like an entropy balancing algorithm.
Right, highly technical stuff.
It's extremely. You ask the AI to debug why the algorithm isn't mathematically converging. The AI parses the math and fixes the syntax of the code. Then you, the human director, step in to think through the actual economic interpretation of that fix. Like, does this make sense for the real-world scenario? And once you validate it, you hand it back to the AI.
And you hand it back using incredibly niche, specialized academic commands that the tool bundles in. For instance, the /regtable command.
What does that do?
Let's say your regression outputs are sitting in a messy, raw CSV file. You run that command, and the AI converts that raw data into a pristine, publication-ready LaTeX table. It automatically formats the numbers to 3 decimal places. It puts the t-statistics in parentheses. It adds the correct significant stars, and it notes the fixed effects.
Oh, that is amazing. It entirely eliminates the tedious manual formatting that usually drains a researcher's energy.
Exactly. There is also a /lit search command. It scans your local markdown files, finds your citations, and generates one-line summaries of the literature right there in your working document. You truly have a fully onboarded assistant.
But all sessions have to end eventually. How do we ensure today's tacit knowledge doesn't evaporate when we close the window?
You simply type /wrap session. The AI reviews the transcript of everything you both discussed and built over the last few hours. It updates that status.md file with the new reality of the project. It outlines the logical next steps for tomorrow, and then it prompts you to commit all of these changes to your version control system.
So tomorrow, you start from exactly where you left off, documented perfectly in plain text.
You got it.
I do have to ask the obvious question here, though. Claude, the AI model we are discussing already has an auto memory feature built into its standard interface. You know, you tell it something once and it remembers it silently for all your future chats. Why go to the trouble of establishing this elaborate architecture of physical markdown files inside your repository? Isn't an invisible auto memory vastly more convenient?
It seems more convenient on the surface, absolutely. But relying on AI auto memory for complex project facts is actually a massive trap.
Trap? How so?
It comes down to where that memory physically lives. Auto memory lives entirely outside of your project repository. It is a black box. It is completely invisible to you, the human user. You can't easily audit it. It is not version controlled, meaning if the AI remembers something incorrectly, you can't roll it back to a previous state.
Right.
And perhaps most critically, it is fundamentally impossible to share with other human collaborators.
So an invisible auto memory is fantastic for your personal user preferences.
Mm-hmm.
Like telling the AI, always write my scripts in Python instead of R, or always explain concepts to me using a friendly conversational tone. But it is disastrous for actual collaborative facts about the work itself.
Let's ground this with a highly specific scenario. Imagine you are working with a massive financial database, mm-hmm. and you're trying to account for correlated data points, a process called clustering standard errors.
Okay.
During your work, you uncover a crucial, weird quirk in the data. You realize that a specific company identifier in the database, let's say Yavivki 12345, had a massive financial restatement back in the year 2003 that skews all your math. You figure out a workaround and you tell the AI.
But if that vital piece of context, that restatement in 2003, is hidden inside the AI's invisible auto memory, it is functionally lost. Because if a human colleague pulls down your code repository 3 months later to review your work, they have absolutely no idea why you wrote a bizarre exception for DIFE 12345. They will think your code is just broken.
Exactly the problem. That kind of fact belongs in the open. It must be committed to your version control system. It must be readable by anyone who opens the project folder, and it needs to be editable in any basic text editor on the planet. If a piece of knowledge matters to the execution of the project, it should be a tangible file inside the project.
You are basically dragging the memory out of the black box and forcing it into the light.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, absolute transparency is what elevates this from a tool you use into a genuine co-authorship. If the AI holds all the context in a hidden proprietary memory bank, you are entirely dependent on it. But if the context lives in plain, standardized markdown files that both of you constantly read and write to, then both parties have their hands firmly on the thinking, the coding, and the writing. Neither the human nor the machine owns the project state exclusively.
Wow. So what does this all mean for you, the listener? We have spent a lot of time today discussing academic research, complex statistical models, and coding environments. And the tool itself was undeniably built with academics in accounting, finance, and empirical social sciences in mind.
But the underlying principle is entirely universal, regardless of your field. Whether you are outlining a massive sci-fi novel, building a software startup from scratch, or organizing discovery for a sprawling legal case. If you have a long-running project that requires juggling multiple types of knowledge drafts, research, logic, and that crucial tacit understanding of what comes next, this file-based approach changes everything.
Human-AI collaboration doesn't actually require some mind-bending, futuristic neural interface. It just requires the exact same foundational file-based interface we have been using to collaborate with other human beings for half a century. We just had to be disciplined enough to explicitly write our mental state into those files.
And this raises an important question, something really worth lingering on long after this deep dive is over. We have established that making our tacit knowledge explicit meticulously, writing down all our unwritten assumptions, our quirks, our daily handoffs in plain text files, is the only structural way to genuinely collaborate with an AI over a long period. But consider the secondary effect of that discipline.
What do you mean?
If we spend the next decade systematically training ourselves to externalize our unwritten rules perfectly, just so a machine can understand us, will we accidentally fix the communication problems we've had with our human coworkers for generations? We'll leave you to think about that.
That is a phenomenal thought to end on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Start looking at the unwritten rules floating around in your own head. And start turning your tacit knowledge into tangible files today. Because once you give your brilliant amnesiac a permanent, shared notebook, there really is no limit to what you can build together.